All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, world, and welcome to Veterans Radio, and congratulations to the Michigan Wolverines for winning the Big Ten tournament. Pretty exciting stuff going on out there, I think. It's one of the problems of doing a program at 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon when basketball season is going in play. But anyway, my name is Dale Thronberry, and I want to welcome you all to Veterans Radio today. We've got an exciting lineup for you, and we're trying to get a hold of a friend of ours who's walking across the country. And so many of you may remember a couple of weeks ago that we talked with a young man named Eli Smith. And Eli is attempting to raise awareness of post-traumatic stress and other issues with the Afghan-Iraqi veterans. And so he decided that he's going to walk across the country. And so he's his thing is called a Four Corners Hike. And so we have I can't see the screen right now, so I'll have to hold on for a second while I try to figure that out. But anyway, Eli is on the was in Las Vegas, and so that may explain why he's not available on the phone. But he has set up a GoFundMe account for his trek across the world or across the United States. And so I would suggest if you get an opportunity to do that, go to GoFundMe.com/4CornersHike. That's the number four, the word corners hike. And then, maybe you can, never mind. We've got him on the line here. So as soon as we're running around like crazy, this has been just the kind of day it has been, folks. Have you ever had one of those things? You know, we have power outages here out here in Ann Arbor, and I don't, and it's cold. It's like the middle of winter. And so I kind of started off my day by, helping our neighbors across the street. We have power. The people across the street have not had power for 4 days. So many people are running extension cords across the street to help their neighbors. And we had one of our neighbors come in and do her laundry and so forth. We tried to help another neighbor get their generator started without success. But it's just been that kind of day today. So I understand that we made contact, so I'm going to bring him on right now. So Eli Smith, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Hello, sir. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. I was really just been one of those days, you know. But so tell me, how's the march going?
It is amazing. What was supposed to be 2 days through Tucson has branched out, and I am now went up to Tucson. I got invited up to Phoenix, and then to various organizations and political figures here in Las Vegas wanted me to come up here. They actually flew me out. I've been here. I'm going to be here for about a week. I'm actually leaving in a couple of days. But met senators, congressmen, went to the Nevada State Veterans Home, having lunch with the Las Vegas fire chief and the mayor here in a little bit. And it's just been I don't know. It's beyond my expectations.
Well, let's remind our audience of what you're doing. Eli is a U.S. Army veteran, sold everything and decided that he wanted to walk 13,000 miles to all four corners of the country to raise awareness. As I mentioned earlier on, is that you're trying to raise awareness for post-traumatic stress and other issues that veterans have to deal with coming back from this war. And how far have you walked so far?
About 1,600 miles at this point.
Boy, it's going to take you more than a year, I think, to do it.
It's probably looking more like 4 years, four more years at this point.
Wow. I while we were trying to reach you, I told everybody to go to the GoFundMe account that you've set up and, maybe raise a little funding so that they can help you out.
Yes, there is that. What a lot of people have been doing have been going to the Facebook page, and that's at Four Corners Hike, all one word with the number four, And there's actually a PayPal link at the top of the page.
Oh, okay.
My funds have since gone, and this hike is now funded 100% on donations.
Well, I think you're doing a great thing, Eli, and I certainly hope that things work out. On your Facebook page, is there a schedule of where you're hoping to be? Have you found people joining up with you to walk for a little, short distances and so forth?
There have been a couple people to walk with me here and there. I do get a lot of questions of when I'll be in a certain area, but I can just never answer that. I was supposed to, get to San Diego in about 3 weeks. And like I said, that 2 days through Tucson has turned into just over a month.
Right.
But as long as I'm sharing the message, I don't care how long it takes or where I go. I still will hike the original route and go to all four corners. And this page has already saved a life. There's a letter on the page that I posted with his permission. Long story short, he went to the bathroom with his pistol in his hand. He planned to shoot himself that night. He was looking through his Facebook, literally out loud saying goodbye to all the families and friends. And one of the people from my page shared it, one of his friends, and he saw it. And curiosity said got the best of him. And he saw the support and everyone coming together around the country. And he changed his mind. He went into the living room, kissed his wife, told him what was going to happen. They started crying, and he's with us today, and he's getting help.
Well, it takes a whole country to help these men and women, and we need to let them know that we care about them. And if we can't get the government to do it, we'll do it on an individual basis. And I know when I was in the service, and I'm sure that when you were, everybody always said that, we've got your back, and we've got your back now, too. And I think that's a great story, Eli, and I think maybe I might have to share that with our Facebook people to let them know that things are working. I hope that we can catch up with you every once in a while to see how you're doing, and if you have any more great feedback on what's happening, let us know, please.
I absolutely will. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Eli, and keep up the good work, and I'll buy you a pair of shoes if you need some.
All right, thank you. That sounds good. I'm on my third pair now. I might need some by the time I reach L.A.
All right, thank you. Eli Smith, United States Army veteran, walking across the country with his organization. It's called Four Corners Hike, and he's trying to raise awareness for post-traumatic stress, and it's just one bet. So if you can find him, and you can go to his Facebook page, that's the number Four Corners Hike, the number Four Corners Hike, and maybe you can find out where he is and go out there and walk along with him for a while. So we're going to do that. We're going to take a real quick break, and now we're going to be coming back in just a second with the Navy. The Navy band is coming to town. So we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Veterans Radio. That's the United States Navy, and they're coming to Ann Arbor, Michigan this coming Friday night. That's on the 17th, and they're going to be putting on a free concert at Pioneer High School. And joining me on the right line right now just happens to be the announcer for the United States Navy Band, and that is Chief Courtney Williams. Chief, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to talk with you.
Well, we're really excited here in the local area to have the Navy Band coming to town. And can you tell me a little bit about it? I know it's one of the premier bands in the country.
We are the premier United States Navy Band. We're stationed in Washington, D.C., and our primary mission is to render honors for Navy vets at Arlington National Cemetery. But in addition to that, we also perform local concerts. And then as an extension of that, once a year, we get out on the road, and we take the Navy to the parts of the country that don't get to see their Navy very often. So we go out and represent the thousands of sailors that are deployed and keeping us safe and bring that face to the American public.
Wow. And how big is your – it's I'm looking at the website now for folks. If you want to find out more about this, you can just go to navyband.navy.mil, and all kinds of things are up there about the different types of bands that are available. And you are the concert band, correct?
Right. It is the concert band that's coming to Ann Arbor this Friday. And we'll be traveling. I think we've got about 58 on this trip. We leave out tomorrow morning and have our first concert in Pittsburgh tomorrow night and just keep rolling through. But I think there are 174 enlisted musicians in the band as a whole in our different performing groups. So we got about 58 coming to Ann Arbor for the show on Friday night.
So tell me what you're going to be playing for us on Friday night.
Well, we have a couple of different programs that we're working with, but I can guarantee there's going to be some fantastic wind ensemble music. There's going to be some great vocals, either some Barbra Streisand or some Michael Bublé type stuff. And then, of course, we're going to take some time and honor the vets and play all the service songs and play some patriotic music. We've got some incredible instrumental soloists. They're going to be performing solos, either a string bass or a French horn or clarinet or alto saxophone.
I know all the bands are excited around here. My son happens to be a band director at a local school about 20 miles from here. My grandson happens to be in the band at Pioneer, and so he'll be there on Friday night. How can we get tickets? I understand that that today is really the deadline to reserve tickets.
Yeah, if you want to get tickets, you can call. The number is 734-996-3210. And I also have an email address. It's kind of long, but I'll go through it quickly. It's leachd, L-E-A-C-H-D, at aaps.k12.mi.us. So the phone number again is 734-996-3210. And just so the folks know, all the tickets are free and distributed to the public. We tend to, with free tickets, you sometimes don't get everyone that comes to the show. So about 10 or 15 minutes before showtime, which is 7 o'clock, we go ahead and open the doors. Even if you don't have tickets, if there are any seats available, if people can come on in. We want to get as many people to see the band as possible.
All right. I think it's exciting. I can't wait to see you guys. I hope to meet you in person, maybe if I get the opportunity.
Absolutely. I'd look forward to it.
I think it's going to be fun. This is Friday night, March 17th. At 7 p.m., it's at Pioneer High School in the Schreiber Auditorium. That's on West Stadium Boulevard, right diagonally across from the Big House. And the tickets are all free, but you do need to reserve them unless you show up and, you know, people don't show. They'll give the tickets out anyway. They don't want any empty seats.
So you That's right. We want a packed house.
That's right. It's a big auditorium, so it's gonna be nice and loud. I love it when we go to the concerts at Schreiber Auditorium. So, Chief, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, and I'll look forward to meeting you on Friday night and telling everybody in the whole Washtenaw County area to come on out and listen to the Navy Band.
Thanks so much. We'll see you on Friday.
Okie doke. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You have a great night.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Remember that. The phone number is 734-996-3210. 734-996-3210. The other was Dave Leach's email, and I didn't write that down fast enough for him, but I'll get that before the end of the program. So we're going to do a quick transition here into another story. So we've got Eli Smith, who's walking across the country helping out awareness for post-traumatic stress disorder. We've got the U.S. Navy Band coming for a little excitement in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And now we've got a young woman who is coming on the program to talk to us about another program that is designed to help veterans. This is what we do here at Veterans Radio. We try to get all the information we can find and pass it along to you. So if you know of an organization that has a special program or any type of fundraising for veterans' needs and so forth, please contact us at Veterans Radio, and we'll be more than happy to get you on the air. I think it's really important to do this. Anyway, joining me on the line right now is another Michigan native, and congratulations again to the Wolverines for their basketball victory to get today. And this is Linda Weglicki, I don't want to mess that up too much, PhD, registered nurse, professor, and associate dean for nursing research at Florida Atlantic University. And Linda, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Thornberry, for having me on today. I appreciate that.
Well, it's an exciting day here in Ann Arbor, and as you know, as a Michigan grad yourself, we tend to overdo victories once in a while.
Yes, but well deserved.
It is well deserved. Well, you've got a great program going also, and I wanted to ask you onto the program to share this with our audience, and we've got about, I think we can, about 10 minutes. And to talk about this consortium that you're putting together. Can you tell me a little bit about what you are doing and where this idea came from?
Well, actually, I'm a small part of this program. This program was launched at the University of Colorado, Denver. And the project lead is Dr. Cheryl Krauss-Perello. And this project is supported under PCORI. And PCORI is interested in supporting work that looks at helping patient-centered outcomes research. It's an independent, nonprofit, non-governmental organization in Washington, D.C., and their mandate is to improve quality and relevance of evidence to help patients, caregivers, clinicians, employers, policymakers to help with healthcare decisions in this country. And they look at comparative effectiveness research or ways to support and improve methods to conduct research and studies. But they've had a particular interest in supporting veterans, and Cheryl has been a part of this work. And under this PCORI initiative, there are six states that are actually part of this particular project called the Veterans Action League, and it's building capacity to engage veterans in this PCORI and comparative effectiveness research activities. And the six states are the largest states to veterans in the United States: California, Texas, Florida, which is where I am right now, Pennsylvania, New York, and Ohio. I'm doing work as part of South Florida, where we have a very large veteran population. And the participants work with veterans themselves and institutions of higher education. I'm from Florida Atlantic University, so I represent the institution of higher education as a researcher, so that we can also, on the back end of things, meet the primary objective of this, which is to develop resources to help veterans and people who care about veterans be able to use resources that come out of this project. So if I can maybe tell you what the principal objectives are, maybe that might be helpful to your listeners.
That would be very helpful. And I'm just looking at the list of these. You know, you got some pretty powerful universities involved with this. You've got the University of Colorado, Denver, the University of San Diego, University of Texas, San Antonio, Penn State University, and the University of Rochester, and that school down south, better known as Ohio State University.
Yes, that well, we were going to name them last, so that's fine. In all good fun.
But you know, before you get into that, I was talking to someone. There's a doctor up here at U of M that is involved with prosthetics and some stem cell work and nerve regeneration, and you probably know more about this than I do. But they're working in this is the Big Ten gets along. You know, we get along with Ohio State just fine. That and he is working with doctors at the Ohio State Hospital on the nerve regeneration, which I think is just fascinating. And anyway, that's a digression. But the idea of all of these incredible universities with all of your research capabilities and talents are helping veterans and looking for new ways to help veterans.
Exactly. And this project is a little bit unique in the fact that, you know, we are partnered, these rich research institutions, as you say, with actually veterans from the community. And we are working with veterans and veteran stakeholders, people who could be caregivers, who might be working with veterans. They could be people who are just interested in helping veterans. who come together and talk about how do we best help veterans identify healthcare resources in order to help them maybe be better informed about the decision-making related to their healthcare services. So this will be a long-term project. They come together and they talk about all of these issues related to their healthcare and how they might be better informed about the decision-making that they would like to see in the future related to their healthcare. So the outcome will be a toolkit that will be developed that could be utilized by all of these potential stakeholders, veterans, leaders, and advocates for veterans, could be families or caregivers, could be service providers, it could be just community members or civilians, researchers, it could be policymakers or community leaders, of course. So everyone will benefit potentially from this toolkit that becomes available through these discussions with all of these potential interested parties for healthcare for veterans. What? So it's really a grassroots effort, which has not been seen in the past. This is sort of a new approach to this.
I think it sounds like a great idea, and as I'm reading through one of the PR pieces that I received from Giselle, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that the program is in response to the 23 million veterans in the country who need healthcare mm-hmm. services, and I'm not sure with the current administration what's going to happen to the VA anyway, and so the idea of these grassroots organizations, as you mentioned, through these right now six major universities, and it mm-hmm. probably will expand, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you're, right? Yeah, and that you are working with other organizations, as I'm reading here, they've got Canines providing assistance to wounded warriors and all these other different organizations that are coming together. I think this is just great, and it makes me as an older veteran very happy and pleased for the younger veterans. I think this is something that has been needed for so many years.
So to help your listening audience understand that, the principal investigator, the person who pulled this proposal together at this point, Cheryl Krause Perello at the University of Colorado,
right.
Was instrumental in the Canines Providing Assistance to Wounded Warriors project, which was originally funded by PCOR as well. So she was very instrumental in that as the sort of grassroots effort because her husband was also a veteran. So, you know, she's coming from that very deep understanding of some of the needs, through her personal experiences, as many of us have had. So, you know, building off of those personal experiences to help veterans as well. And, of course, you know, I'm partnered with a veteran from our community, and we hold our think tank meetings with our interested partners in our particular region, and we work very closely together. I work with Sergeant Austin Capers in the Florida region, and, you know, we bring our participants together at our think tank, and just in each of these participating states, they're holding think tank sessions with their participants. So if people are interested in joining these think tank sessions, they have opportunities to do so at all of these institutions and through their community contacts, being their Veterans Action League unit organizer, whoever their contact is, through those organizations. And I'll give you a contact person through the University of Colorado before we end our conversation today in case one of your listeners is from one of these states and is close to one of these different universities where they might be holding a think tank and they are available to join one of those.
Okay.
Because I think it's really important if people, you know, want to be able to share some of their experiences or they want to help contribute to those conversations and those discussions that they have the opportunity to do so. There are opportunities for your listeners to participate in those dialogues.
I think it's a great opportunity, and I noticed that you do have a Facebook page,
yeah,
where people can can contact and get some information also and read about other stories that are going on. Why don't you give me that contact right now?
Well, I know that I'm going to put a plug in for the Florida one if I can first.
Okay, that's fine.
Because, you know, that's where I'm from. And we have our actual next think tank session is going to be held on April 11th, 4:30 to 5:30, and it's actually at Florida Atlantic University. So anybody who might be in the Boca Raton area, and we have people coming in from Miami and north for a think tank session. So it's April 11th, 4:30 to 5:30, and it typically runs a little bit longer than that, but we try and be sensitive to our participants and, you know, try and keep them as close to the time. Okay. And they can either contact Sergeant Capers at 561-881-8500. And I'm going to repeat that, 561-881-8500, and that's extension 105. Or they can contact me, and I'm just
going
to give them...
Hold on, Linda. I'm sorry. Okay. We're running up against the clock. Can I ask you to hold on? We're going to take a break for the news. And then we'll come back and we'll finish up with our interview, okay?
Okay.
All right.
How long do I...
We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we were so rudely interrupted by the news. How could they do that to us? But on the line right now, I have Linda Weglicki, who is an organizer, or she's participating in a program to help veterans. It's called the Veterans Action League, and she is from Florida Atlantic University, and we rudely interrupted her while she was giving us contact information. So, Linda, let's go back there, and let me give a quick review, is that this is... These universities across the country, we're looking at the University of Colorado, the University of San Diego, University of Texas, Penn State University, University of Rochester, New York, and Ohio State University. Just to mention, it sounds like the beginning group. Is that right?
That's correct.
It's going to expand dramatically, ladies and gentlemen. We know this. We know this. So, all right. So we were talking about the idea of how people can contact, at least especially the people in Florida, and you gave out a number which was pretty quick. So can we go back and review who you were talking about in Florida?
Right. So if people are interested in joining the think tank session in Florida, and that would be at Florida Atlantic University, which is in Boca Raton, they can contact Sergeant Austin Capers, and his number is 561-881-8500, extension 105.
Got that.
Or they can send me an email, and my email address is weglicki@health.fau.edu. And if they're interested in participating in any of the other five states, California, Texas, Pennsylvania, New York, or Ohio, they can contact the project director, Meg Payton, P-A-Y-T-O-N, and I'm just going to give you her office number, and she's very prompt at answering calls.
Okay.
That's 303-724-8233, and I'll repeat that. 303-724-8233.
And what was her name again?
Her name is Meg Payton, P-A-Y-T-O-N, and she is the VAL project manager and the unit liaison coordinator.
Okay. I think this is a great program that you've gotten yourself involved in. and I hope we can... Pardon?
I feel very privileged. I feel very privileged to be a small part of this.
Well, I think it sounds like it's going to be a big project, and that's what we need is some of these big civilian run projects that I think are going to help out. Somebody asked me during the break. It says, "How are you funded? Are the universities funding the project, or is there some organization that's behind it?"
At the beginning of our conversation, I had mentioned that this was partially supported by PCORI.
Okay.
And PCORI is a non-government funded, but they do have funds to support projects that help individuals. It's an independent, nonprofit, non-government agency, and they look at evidence to help patients, caregivers, and policymakers better inform health decisions. And clinical effectiveness is really what they're designed to do.
Well, I think I think this is a great idea, and we're very excited to have made contact with you. And please have, you know, send me more information as you go along, and we'd be happy to have you back on the program to talk about the progress.
Well, I look forward to that, and thank you so very much. And, of course, go blue.
Hey, yes, absolutely. Okay, thank you, Linda, very much.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
You too. All right. Well, we're not going to take a break right now. We're going to go right into our next story. I told you today was going to be a busy day. This next one is about a documentary that is coming up tomorrow night on the Smithsonian Channel. And, well, I'll let the producer of this talk to us. Right now we're welcoming Jeff Guskey, who is an emergency physician, it says, and revealed an underground city and hidden world beneath a French wheat field. I saw the promo, and I started watching the documentary just a little while ago. Jeff, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. It's good to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. This looks like a fascinating story.
It is. It's one that we cannot imagine in modern terms because, you know, from the U.S. perspective, we're used to anything that would be a major find, you know, a historic treasure being protected, marked, you know, curated. And yet in a modern Western country, that of France, lo and behold, there are a mind-boggling amount of places that are frozen in time from 100 years ago in the raw and unprotected. And the place that we take the audience underground for the Smithsonian Channel documentary that airs tomorrow night, it is a place where American treasures are being vandalized and threatened. And it's like stepping on the flag. You cannot believe how much is down there.
Well, let's remind our audience, because I didn't do a very good job of introducing this. My apology. But this is an underground cavern type of place. Actually, it looks like it was a limestone.
It was really an underground city, Dale. And the reason why is because these were very large stone quarries that predate the war by centuries. In some places, one place, in fact, was over 25 miles underground in one place. It's like subway stations that go on and on and on. And the armies on both sides brought the technology of the day underground with rail, telecommunications, power generation, electric lights, hospitals, food systems, chapels, synagogues, and living quarters, offices. Some of the places are so large that they have street signs underground.
Really?
And all of that remains. It's just, you can't believe it. So it changes the whole way we look at World War I from a trench war to a trench and underground cities war. And at any given time, tens of thousands of men would be living underground. It was the only place where you could find safety. But from a humanitarian point of view, in terms of why it matters to us today, you know, World War I was fought by modern people. And I'm sure that your audience is more in touch with this because they're military, but a lot of people look at World War I as ancient because you look at the old photographs and silent films and it makes it seem ancient. But these were modern people. They drove cars. They went to work on subways. They lived in high rises. They had telephones. They, you know, went to the movies. They had mass media, and they were affected by modern life just like us. And what happened, you know, it's the first modern mass destruction. No one saw it coming. No one realized the danger they faced. So when you go underground, what you see are these messages to the future by modern people that are basically telling us about our own vulnerabilities. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's you know, when we're so polarized today, everything's right and left. People can't even talk to one another if they don't think the same. And yet when you can talk about today and our own vulnerabilities, which is what I do in the ER as an emergency physician, without any right and left when you're talking about World War One, because, you know, no one cares about right or left, you know, when you're talking about then. I don't know if so. You see messages to the future. You see notes to loved ones. You see funny things. Like, for example, in the place where we did the documentary, it was a bunch of New England guys. It was the 26th mm-hmm. Division, which was one of the first units deployed overseas in World War One. It was comprised of National Guard units, all volunteers, from the New England states of Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. And these were young guys that grew up in the neighborhoods together. You know, there was no GI Bill, there was no all the benefits that come, you know, fortunately mm-hmm. with today's service, they didn't have. All they had was this passion to defend the country. And they grew up together, they went to school together, they played sports together, they got in trouble together, and they went down, you know, together to the recruiting office, and they fought and died together. And so you see the guys in the neighborhoods, you know, and they, you know, they're writing their street addresses and drawing pictures of their homes. And then, so it's 1918. Now, what is 1918 in baseball history? The Red Sox were on a winning spree. And as we know, this would be the last year until modern times. The curse of the Bambino would come the following year. But they were so excited about the Red Sox. And so you see underground, beneath a farm field. In fact, I was just there last week, spent the whole day underground in this one site. You, in big, bold letters, Red Sox 7, Yanks 4.
let's kind of review what this was like underneath this wheat field in France. As you mentioned, yes. It was kind of a former limestone quarry, and I know that you've yes. discovered that almost each army that participated in World War One was down there at one time or another. And
yeah, in fact, this is a perfect example that when the line would move, you know, they were pretty static, but they would move back and forth sometimes. So you would have occupation by the French and then the Germans, and then it would go back into the French hands. And then, you know, when the Americans came along, they occupied it in this place for 6 weeks. And by the way, one thing that I think your audience will find very touching from the standpoint of the ordinary soldier, you see down there respect that one army is paying to another. You'll see a French name right next to a German name, mm-hmm. and they do not deface the other guy's name. They leave it intact.
Okay.
It's really, it's from the front line perspective, something that's very emotional and moving. And you see a lot of this. I mean, when I was there a week ago, Wednesday, actually it wasn't last, now it's Sunday. So anyway, it was a week before last. I'm kind of in ER mode, you know, my days are off. But what you find is just so much stuff. You know, you look down and there are live grenades, lots of live bullets. You find medical equipment, telecommunication. There's a handset on the wall, you know, from a telephone handset. Mm-hmm. You find helmets and boots and knives and sabers and there's a rifle with a live round in the chamber that was bent, and they just left it there. And so, I mean, you just can't imagine. There's a clock that I think was left there by an American soldier, and the hands are frozen in time. Mm-hmm. But the messages are what's so compelling, because, you know, imagine that we're you know, 18, 19, 20 years old. You don't know if you're going to live the next day. And there's something inside all of us, I believe, and especially as an ER doc, that, you know, when we face our own mortality, we want to feel like our lives matter. And so they wrote their names on the walls, not knowing if anyone would ever see them, as almost like a note in a bottle from a shipwrecked person,
right,
you know, that washes up on shore so many years later. And so what we do in the program that creates a human connection to World War I that, to my knowledge, is new in terms of the media that's been done for, during the 100-year anniversary, we track down the families of some of these young men.
I was wondering if you did that. I think that was the thing when you were reading the names, when I was watching the preview of the names that were on the wall, and you knew the towns that they came from. I figured that he's going to go find these people.
You know, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it, you know, as we're talking, because, you know, you're meeting these family members that had no idea that their father wrote messages to the future, so I was able to go with the help of my team to track these families down and meet with them in New England, and I presented them with photographs that their father, you know, of inscriptions their fathers made, and then there's something else that is so emotional it leaves people in tears when they watch this documentary. Grown people are crying at the end. And it has to do with something that none of us expected when we were making the documentary. Can I just tell you about it in a nutshell?
Sure.
It has to do with Native Americans.
I was going to ask you about them.
Yeah. Well, I've been all over the Western Front. You know, I practically live in France, you know, these days, half the time, you know, come back and forth, you know, come back home to do an ER shift and then go back, and very big project. So anyway, I had found that there were Native American carvings in several of the sites where Americans were, but you know, back at that time there was the Wild West shows, the Buffalo Bill. The symbol of the Native American was a motif of courage and of valor in battle, and so it was like a mascot, I thought. But just by chance, one of my team members, who is the historian at the Maine National Guard, was visiting with the tribal historian from the Passamaquoddy Indian tribe, way up on the northeast coast of Maine, on the ocean. And so nine of these young men, who were not citizens, the Indian tribes did not get the right to vote until 1924. They couldn't buy land. They couldn't marry outside the tribe. There were lots of limitations, but it was still their country. And within the week after Wilson declared war, there they are volunteering. And so he just happened to have some of my photographs on his iPad, and he shows them to the tribal historian. It wasn't even planned. And this guy, I've not met him, but he just seems like an amazing person. It's almost like he went into a trance. He wasn't even seeing the photograph. What he was focusing on were symbols in the photograph that you know, no person outside the tribe would recognize. And it turns out that was the moment in that encounter. By serendipity, we found the first evidence that they were down there, and they didn't write their names because they didn't see themselves as individuals. They saw themselves as members of an ancient tribal tradition. And so instead they wrote these symbols, and one of them stands for peace and love. And the tribal historian said this dates back in their tribal tradition for several thousand years. Isn't that something?
That gave me goosebumps when I saw that. We're talking with Jeff Guskey, who's the producer, director, photographer, and everything else of Americans Underground, A Secret City of World War One, which is going to be shown tomorrow night on the Smithsonian Channel, the 13th at, well, it's going to be more than once, but it's at 8 o'clock, 11 o'clock,
yeah.
and many times thereafter, I hope.
It'll play on the 17th as well, and it'll play around the around April 6th when the big exhibition opens at the Smithsonian Air and Space, which will be a nearly 19-month exhibit where people can see the photographs and also see drawings from 1918 from mm-hmm. American soldiers. But I wanted to tell you the PS, which I think your audience will find particularly meaningful, and this is where the tears come. I almost don't want to tell people. I'm going to give you a little preview.
Okay. Everybody don't listen. No.
What's that?
No, I was kidding. I was saying everybody don't listen because he's going to give away something.
Yeah.
But
no,
we're going to be ahead of the
curve.
We're going to be way ahead of the curve.
So because these young men were not citizens, they were not honored for their sacrifice. For example, the son of the tribal chief who was next in line to become chief was killed the last day, the last full day of the war on November 10th. And other young men were brutally wounded, amputations and lifelong injuries, but there were no medals. So because of this chance discovery by my team member, Lieutenant Jonathan Bratton, we were able, through his efforts and the efforts of the state of Maine, to posthumously award honors to these fallen soldiers. And so their families received medals and flags.
Oh.
And over 300 people from the tribe attended. And they have been serving their country since World War One.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see people from every service, men and women in uniform, Vietnam, Korea, you know, the most recent wars in Iraq, and World War Two. You know, it's really emotional. And I almost have to stop for a minute. There's something every time I see it. It's so powerful because it's about America. You know, we're so mm-hmm. people are confused about what America means now. You know, but soldiers are never confused because they have their rear end on the line fighting. They, you know, they're real clear about what America
right.
means.
Absolutely.
And what freedom means.
Mm-hmm.
And this film just hits a nerve with that, you know, where it brings us together as a country, as people, and it's a dignity story, and it ties 100 years ago to today as if it's yesterday.
I was thinking about when you were down there, let's back up a little bit. How did you hear about this underground world?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I'm sure everybody can relate to coincidences in your life.
Yes.
Where, you know, if you had not been at a certain place, like if you were 30 seconds late, or, you know, if your car hadn't been out of gas and making you, you know, late for an appointment, you know, things that happen,
right.
missing a flight and then meeting somebody critically important. That's kind of what happened. I was on a 6-week journey, photographing the Western Front. And I was kind of ready to come home. The French Defense Ministry had very graciously set up meetings with local officials who in turn introduced me to local people along the Western Front. And anyway, I had researched the area, which was my last stop before coming home. And I didn't know why in the heck I was going there, because when you looked on the internet, there was nothing left. You know, a lot of the Western Front, and especially where tourists go, which is on the northern part of the Western Front, the places have been modernized, and all you have left are the little white crosses of the cemeteries and monuments. You know, it's people can't imagine all the hidden world of World War One that exists in other parts of the front. Anyway, so I was almost ready to cancel, and just to be polite, I thought, no, I'm not going to cancel. And so I meet this young man named Frank Viltart, who has become a very dear friend, and he works for the French government and in that area. and he's a World War I expert. And so he takes me way out in the countryside.
Says, you got to see
dirt
this,
road.
Right?
Pardon me?
I said, he says, you've got to see this.
Now, he didn't tell me. We just go. And he didn't tell me what I was in for.
Okay.
And so we go out in this, you know, the rural area, and we climb up a hillside through brush, thick brush, and then come up over a mound. And then before my eyes is the first underground city. This one, we didn't have to crawl down into. It was cut horizontally into this hillside. And oh my gosh, you know, you just couldn't, you know, that I knew very quickly that this was a huge story. So you have museum quality artwork on the walls. You have in this particular place two live trench mortars that are just leaning against, you know, the stone wall as if it's yesterday, as if the war was yesterday. And you find soldiers' beds and shoes and bottles and other, you know, stuff that people just left, and beautiful carvings and jokes. Oh, there's one inscription that's kind of funny. There's a German soldier that's bending over with his head, you know, up the behind of a goose. And a French soldier taking a bayonet and from behind, and like, you know, it's a little bit crude, but it, you know, in the context of it was meant to be funny. And, so you see every aspect of the soldier's inner life from humor to sports scores to home to loved ones to girlfriends to, you know, to fear. Here's another one that comes to mind. When the Cubs won the series, you know, the Cubs were in the same situation that the Red Sox would be after, you know, they had a big, long losing streak. Well, amongst these New England guys, for some reason, there was a guy from Chicago, an Irishman, and he was killed. And so how did he want to be remembered? He was a Cubs fan, so his buddies carved the logo of the Cubs from 1918, and they inscribed his name in that logo, and like a, you know, it's a C. And I didn't even know what it was. I was on duty one night. This is a little sidetrack, but it was like 3 a.m, and the ER was quiet, and this middle-aged Hispanic American female who was my ER tech. She, out of the corner of her eye, she catches this image, and she said, "Dr. Dusky, stop, stop, stop. That's it. Go back. You know, that was the 1918 logo of the Cubs. How in the heck would she know that?" But she was right.
Wow.
And so there was an underground baseball rivalry. So
well, that's,
I'm sorry.
I'm saying that goes on. I can remember even when I was in Vietnam, we knew the scores of every game, players, all these things. People were very, unfortunately, we're running out of time, Jeff. And, I want to make sure that people understand that they've got to watch this tomorrow night on the Smithsonian Channel at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. It's the Americans Underground, Secret City of World War One. We've been talking with, Jeff Guske, who's probably the main photographer, writer, director, get everything that needs to be done on this. I'm anxious to watch
it. Well, Lone Wolf Media is my production partner. They are really unbelievable. They deserve, you know, tremendous credit. I never could have done it without them. And let me just mention one last thing, if I may, Dale, that every day on my social media, which is Hidden WWI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, we post a new photograph from the hidden world of World War I, and we'll have a lot more coming.
Okay, so we will do that, Jeff. Thank you very much. You can hear our band is going. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Thank you. All right, folks. Another Veterans Radio is in the can. We've been talking about a lot of different things. We'll be back next week. Till then, you're dismissed.